You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report. With Sam Steeder.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, February 10th, 2015. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And this is the three-time award-winning The Majority Report. We are broadcasting to you live, steps from the industrial-ravaged Gowanus Canal.
In the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Paul Mason, economics editor at Channel 4 News in the UK, is going to be talking with Sam in a pre-recorded but still brand-new interview about Syriza, what's really going on in Greece, and what happens when the youth revolt against the elite. And then it's going to be back to us for the fun half, where we're going to talk about...
Well, we have tons of stories for you today, ladies and gentlemen. First up, Utah lawmakers. I teased this one yesterday, but we didn't get around to it. We will definitely get to it today. Utah lawmakers are arguing over whether a certain something should classify as rape, and we will get to what that certain something is. And you could wonder, when you find out what it is, which lawmakers are arguing about this, like what party they belong to, and what sex they are.
You might also be interested to find out what's going on in their personal lives. Also, Fox News, they're actually discovering a whole new angle on the rape crisis, which, well, wow. Wow, 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 wow. I'll be talking about that. Republicans, they're trying to hustle and hoodwink on inequality. I'll explain that. Also, what the Democrats can but probably won't do about it.
Also, Alex Jones would like to point out that Rand Paul is certainly not a sexist, and he'll explain it to you in the most magnificent of terms.
That's right. So, folks, we'll be back in the fun half. This interview with Paul Mason is great. It will give you great groundwork for what's going on in Greece, across the Eurozone, and really it has implications for all of us. So we will be back in about 30, 40 seconds with that interview.
Eternal fire, not the Babylon, you walk again, prove. We are one them fire. I said they just can't win your boy lose. We are one them. Pack up and one, me a beg you move, yeah. Oh, I beg you pack up and one. Me said that movement alive. Marcus said fi organize and centralize. Rasta fi own banks and enterprise. So me nah stop chanting, my soul enter Zion. Princes of fire, Babylon me tell ya your time just expire. What kind of wickedness me a your transpire? And no gasoline and a fire.
We are back. Sam Steeder on the Majority Report on the phone. Paul Mason, he's the economics editor of Channel 4 News in Britain. Paul, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
So, Paul, I know you've been working on and spent about 3 or 4 weeks recording a documentary on Syriza and its rise. I mean, give us you've written a piece where in the Guardian where you outlined there were basically three major elements to this win by the left-wing Syriza. Let's start with the strategic crisis of Europe that led to this.
Well, yeah, that whole thing. I mean, look, you know, Europe is, well, it's the Eurozone, the single currency with 19 separate countries, each with their own tax system. when after 2008, after Lehman Brothers ignited the world, we get to 2010, and it's discovered that several countries can't pay their way. Several countries have banking systems that are so exposed that, the country itself is going to be collapsed by the backwash of the financial crisis. But the additional problem for Greece is that somehow somebody had been cooking the books. They convinced the authorities of the Eurozone that their debt was about 40% of GDP, and what it turned out, it's now 170% of GDP. And this is an unsustainable situation. The IMF, the Eurozone authorities themselves, imposed a solution between 2010 and 2012, and this, the end result of it for Greece has been to collapse the economy by a quarter. So there, for every €4 circulating in the Greek economy in 2010, there are now €3. Wages have fallen by a quarter. Real family incomes down by a third. Suicides up about 50%.
And I want to just go back to that notion of the Greeks basically hiding the percentage of their debt of their GDP. I mean, to a certain extent, wasn't it the case that some of the northern countries, I'm thinking Germany in particular, really must have had some notion of the size of Greek debt, because much of it was, loans that they were making that was basically driving the ability of Greece to buy its products.
Yeah, I mean, look, I have little doubt that there was misaccounting in this body called Eurostat. You can't miss a huge fiscal black hole like that. In a way, we've kind of moved on from the problem. But right. but the deal was in Europe that Germany was able to outcompete its neighbors. And Germany was the winner from having the single currency. Germany also had a good deal when they set the various separate currencies against the single currency when it was formed. So a lot of things were stacked in Germany's favor. Greece, I think, had this peculiar situation. It is a country that had a civil war in the late 1940s. It had a dictatorship in the late 1960s and early 70s. When that dictatorship was overthrown in 1974. As in a lot of these southern European countries, Spain and Portugal, very similar, the working class tended to think like this: we're going to get a welfare state. We're going to get a decent healthcare system. We're going to get social insurance. In return for that, we don't go crazy. We don't arrest and, kind of prosecute and jail all the old generals and fascists who ran the country. That was the deal across southern Europe. And so what happened, especially when the Eurozone, when it looked like everything was going to be really good, you had the situation that people started to create welfare states in southern Europe that they couldn't pay for. And Greece is, of course, notorious for this kind of oligarchic ruling class that deals in shipping and construction and football clubs, and that doesn't pay any tax. So the shipping industry is exempt from tax. So you're not going to be able to have long term a welfare state if the rich don't pay any tax. This was papered over for several years, but then, as I say, the financial crisis in 2008 really exploded into that situation and made it untenable.
And you write that one of the elements that brings about a Syriza victory was the determination of that Greek elite to cling to that old model, I guess, of basically a free ride.
Well, no, I mean, this is the thing that killed centrist politics. So for your listeners, just imagine you've had effectively the equivalent of the death of the Democrats. Imagine the Democrats on 4% of the vote, and then you've had the Republicans in a highly rural country. Greece is a highly rural country. You've had the equivalent of the Republicans shrink to a point where they can't rule. How does that happen? It happens because the European Union says you've got to do this, and the centrist parties all cling together in a single coalition with all the parties. Conservatives like a small state. People on the left of politics don't like the small state. And so what happened is that the centre-left party called PASOK, it's the equivalent of the Democrats or the British, or the equivalent of a mix between Democrats and British Labour. It just collapsed. Now, most of the people who voted for Syriza, even in the last election, they got 27%. This time they got 37%. Yeah? Most of the people who vote for them are on the left side of politics. But what happened this time is that even some, I've met people on the streets of Greece who are, you know, they're affected. If they're in America, they vote Republican and they voted for Syriza because they just, what they're sick of is the austerity. I mean, incredible levels of falling incomes and falling real living standards, alongside the fact that the elite did not reform its own lifestyle. They didn't pay tax. They still have this. There's a lot of patronage. There's a lot of, you know, that party in Godfather 2 where, you know, Michael Corleone invites everybody to Lake Tahoe. Greek politics can be a bit like that.
And so, I mean, was it a function of, and when was that last election? You say that
So in 2012, there was an election, a normal election, where there had to be two elections because nobody won the first one in May 2012. June 2012, society polarized, basically, between the left party, the normal left, as it were, PASOK, the Democrat-style party, collapsed already. So you just had a straight runoff between the right and this far-left party, Syriza, and there was 1.5 percentage points in it. I was in the Syriza HQ on that night in 2012, and one of their journalists came up to me and said, "Thank God we lost." They weren't ready. They weren't even a party. It was an alliance. You know, there were 12 little separate, tiny left-wing and ecological groups at that point. 2 years down the road, as the official opposition sitting in the, you know, the Greek democracy has very well-developed institutions, so the leader of the opposition gets an office and he gets a machine, and this guy, Alexis Tsipras, who leads Syriza, has been for 2 years running a very effective political opposition machine inside the parliament. And so you will have probably seen a guy called Yanis Varoufakis, a shaven-headed, very tough-looking finance minister who's going around Europe right now. Well, you know, 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, that guy was with the normal centre-left. He was with what is the PASOK party that's now collapsed. And this is a symptom. You know, Syriza was, in other words, able to bring over to it many people whose politics were not dissimilar to, say, Obama or Clinton Democrats.
And so there's been a, I don't know if it's fair to call radicalization on some level. Is that a function of the, I mean, I hear you saying it's a function of the austerity. Is it a function of the austerity coupled with the idea that, you know, this isn't exactly austerity for everyone? Or would the austerity even of itself, even if these magnates had said, you know what, we're going to pay a little bit of tax here.
No, it's exactly as you say. That's the baseline. It's the austerity plus the unfairness. And remember, so you're a worker. You pay your tax through your wage bill. You've got to pay it. They brought in a law which said that you had to pay an extra tax, a special tax, to an austerity tax, through your electricity bill, and if you didn't pay it, your electricity was cut off, so that you've got tens of thousands of people with no electricity. This is going to tend to make people really feel quite unhappy. But then, you know, on top of that, there is this other problem. Your listeners may have heard that there is a very strong Nazi party in Greece. And when I say Nazi, when they raided their homes, they had SS uniforms in little secret cupboards, okay? They're Nazis. They revel in violent attacks on ethnic minorities. Now, that's bad enough. At one point, they got 14% in one vote. It's bad enough. Some of their leaders are in jail right now, and they still, in this election, got 7%. But one contributory factor to the radicalization of politics was the way that the center-right party dealt with them. You know, that basically, there are numerous examples where the sort of so-called respectable centre-right politicians of the mainstream party were actually trying to do a deal with these Nazis. There was an emissary sent to talk about, you know, doing a deal over the prosecutions. Numerous kind of, what do we call it, dog whistle politics. You know, the kind of numerous bits of dog whistle politics from the so-called respectable right. And I think a lot of young people said, hold on a minute, we've seen this before in Europe. Hitler came to power not because, you know, he had a strong movement, but because sections of the elite in Germany looked at Hitler and thought, oh, he's a decent guy. You know, he's strong. He can solve a lot of our problems. And I've come into met a lot of Greek young people who, for the final straw for them, was that the political center was prepared to be so soft and so ambivalent about this clear Nazi threat.
And you're talking about Golden Dawn, right?
Yeah, Golden Dawn. Okay. Christiane Gier's name is, yeah.
That's fascinating because, you know, when we talk about in this country the rise of some type of populism, there seems to be, at least in this country, a fear that this could the chances of it being a right-wing populism, this sort of nativist style populism, seems to be, you know, maybe not quite as likely as a left, but it seems to be in play. And it sounds like to me that there was a huge price that the young people were going to subject these elite rulers to, for pandering to that element as a way of sort of sucking that populist energy out of what was going on.
So in Greece, nothing is simple. In 2011, when the austerity really began to be imposed, I was down there on some very iconic demonstrations. The equivalent of Occupy basically happened in Greece in June 2011, when they occupied Syntagma Square, 400 tents, thousands of people. Syntagma Square is their main, it's a square outside Parliament. Now, day after day, as you immersed yourself in that movement, it became clear that it was both a majority far-left movement, but that there were nationalist, right-wing, Orthodox Christian, in fact, groups involved who were also equally opposed to the austerity. So you know, if there is a Tea Party in Greece, and I suppose, you know, the equivalents here are not always exact, but I'm talking about a populist, right-wing, down-home, religiously, you know, kind of quite enthusiastic religious movement, they too were involved in the protest. And there have been numerous parties that have in Greece that have expressed that, short of, you know, non-fascist parties, right-wing parties, and one of them is now in the Greek government. I mean, it's called the Independent Greeks. They have 18 MPs. And what happened was that this far-left party found in 2015, in the election of January 2015, the only reliable ally it could have to actually stand against the austerity was this really quite, you know, so they'd be on the libertarian wing of the Tea Party, to use the parallel. You know, they'd be quite right wing.
Interesting. And is there concerns amongst the left that supports Syriza that they are they form this coalition or well, at least a
yeah,
supplement?
There is. There is concern in Syriza, but I think they know what they're doing. They haven't given this right wing party any control over economic policy. They've given them the defense ministry. Now, one of the worries that NATO had with a left party in Greece, Syriza as a party is in favor of leaving NATO, but when they you know, stood for office, they said, look, we're back. They said to me, they said publicly, we're backburnering that. There's no chance we're going to leave NATO. It's just we may not be very enthusiastic in invading any places NATO wants to invade.
Right.
But, you know, one, you'll know that Greece had a military coup in the late 60s. There's no danger, I don't think, of a military coup in Greece right now. But what, in order to just really put the lid on any fears of any old kind of military industrial complex type of intervention, giving these right-wing Greeks the defense ministry was probably the cleverest thing they could do. More concern in Greece comes from the center-left. Remember, some people sometimes complain that we call Syriza far-left, but it's got a central committee. Most of its leaders are Marxists. Its policies are not Marxist in this sense, but it is a far-left party. Okay, they sing far-left communist anthems at their meetings. Okay, now the real people who are worried right now are this fragmented and defeated center-left. So they're trying to form all kinds of new parties. There are at least two new parties in the last 10 months that try to express what, you know, if you were a kind of Obama Democrat in Greece, you'd be saying, well, yeah, I don't want to join Syriza. What do I do? I need a new party, appeal to youth, technocratic, nice kind of hipsters with beards type of party. And they keep trying to form them, but nothing ever happens. And I think it's those people who are quite worried, the kind of professional center-lefty type people who are worried about what's going to happen. And of course, we're speaking in a week where there's been this incredible, dramatic move by the European Central Bank to cut the Greek banks' access to normal credit from the European Central Bank on Wednesday night. And everybody's watching this and saying, you know, this is turning into a real, you know, rumble in the jungle. It's going to be a massive showdown, you know, within 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah, I want to get to that in just a moment. I just want to finish the last element, and you've touched on it a little bit when you talk about a new way of thinking amongst the young in Greece. I mean, tease that out for us, because this is going to have the real question, in addition to what happens with this battle with the EU, is also, does this spread? Do we see this in, you know, do we see Podemos in Spain? Do we see this? Are we watching a movement that is sort of transnational in some way?
Well, I think we'll come to Spain in a minute, but it's all about the youth. The 60% youth unemployment in Greece, and that's with 100,000 recent migrants to the rest of Europe. So there's big unemployment. And when you speak to people who are employed, they've often got 3 or 4 jobs, waiting table. We're talking about graduates, waiting table, sushi chef, whatever. And what they earn is just stunningly low. You know, they are earning, you know, 400 euros a month, which, let's call that $400 a month. That's a normal thing for a young person to earn, working 10 hours a day, 3 jobs. And, you know, I'm working with, on the documentary, so I'm a network news journalist, but I'm also making an independent documentary. As you mentioned, we made one version of it. We're hoping to make it into a full-length feature film. And the people I'm working with really are just these highly talented people who, if they worked in Hollywood or if they worked in New York City, would be earning decent money. And you know, camera crews, editors, sound technicians, composers. And really, it's heartbreaking to see what they earn and how they live. You know, real estate has collapsed, of course. You know, right. 350 euros a month will get you the top floor of an entire building. And it's just, even to Brits who've had it, we've had it tough, you know, with austerity as well. It just is. So that's going to make you just think two things. Either they want radical change or they give up. And a lot of Greeks are very proud of the fact that they didn't give up, that they went for radical change. You ask about Podemos. This is this Spanish far-left party formed less than 18 months ago. The differences are quite big. I don't know how much your listeners want to know about them, but you know, Podemos is a movement that's come out of nowhere. Syriza was a movement that came out of the new left of the 1970s and is still very, very traditionally leftist. Podemos is the left of the Occupy movement. It's people in thousands who joined the Spanish Occupy movement.
This is the Los Indignados.
The so-called Indignados. But also, you know, even today, you know, a really famous left-wing communist mayor of a small town in Andalusia, Marina Leda, has become famous in iconic as a kind of utopian commune based on land ownership and land sharing. So they threw their lot in with Podemos even today. Podemos got about 25% of the vote. Spain has a traditional socialist party also on about 20% of the vote, much in decline because it couldn't really muster much opposition. It's got a strong and historic centre-right party, the Partido Popular, but they're going to lose any election they stand in because the polls tell us that combined strength of Podemos and the Spanish Socialist Party is close to 50% already. This is a phenomenon sweeping southern Europe, but the surprising thing might be actually that it's only really manifested itself as in politics in Greece and Spain, because in Italy, for various historic reasons, it hasn't. You've got there a more amorphous anti-political movement called the Five Stars Movement, led by this comedian called Beppe Grillo. So they took that. In Italy, that kind of movement took the discontent. And, you know, so discontent just kind of flows. I think, I've been covering this for 5 years, my hunch is discontent flows to where it is expressed strongest. If we come to Greece, Syriza was just like a vehicle ready-made for expressing discontent.
In the absence of that vehicle, you get what we're seeing in Italy, perhaps, which is more of just a disgust.
Yeah, and remember we in Europe, you know, I mean, American listeners might find this just very challenging, but, you know, communism has been part of, and Marxism has been part of our historic, you know, intellectual legacy way beyond the fall of the Berlin Wall. And in Italy, the guy who runs Italy right now, Matteo Renzi, is a product of a party that emerged out of moderate communism. Now, he's not a communist, he's not a Marxist, he's a left social democrat, or he's a social democrat. But, you know, we have an intellectual space and a political space that where far left politics influence a lot of other things. So, you know, the smart money would have been on the emergence of a kind of renewed centre-left out of the whole European crisis. But the really interesting thing is that the way that centre-leftism, you know, there's been no Obama. You know, there really has been no Obama. There is no Obama, there's no Bill de Blasio in many European countries. And therefore what happens is that the radicalism expresses itself through these much more, you know, much more challenging parties. And I should say as well, throughout Southern Europe, your listeners who travel to our continent will know this. To the left of all of that are the autonomist and anarchist and green and eco-warrior youth. You know, there's entire areas of these cities you're talking about, from Madrid to Barcelona to Athens to Sevilla in Andalusia, where, you know, it's normal to walk past squats and occupied places that are sort of an alternative reality.
That's fascinating. And so lastly, because I know you have to go, what give us a sense of what we should be looking for. You mentioned that over the next 3 weeks, this sort of I guess showdown in terms of Greek lending, of basically getting of trying to restructure what was the bailout is going to resolve itself. Tell us what we should be looking for.
Okay, the long term aim of the Greek far left government is to restructure the debt. So they want to swap bonds that come due in 2024 for bonds that never come due and that don't pay any interest at all until Greece grows. That's not like cancelling the debt, it's like rescheduling it forever. For them, they say it's a no-brainer that the debt's unpayable and that the servicing the interest is just killing the economy. I kind of agree with that, and many mainstream economists, or even on the right, agree with that. But what Syriza did is it also said, by the way, we're cancelling the austerity. We were elected on a mandate to cancel the austerity, so we're cancelling it. Privatisation agency is closed. The privatisations are cancelled. The minimum wage is hiked by 50%, and so on and so on and so on. The police have been not disarmed, but they are no longer turning up on normal demos armed with, you know, live ammunition. There has been no tear gas fired since Syriza came into power, despite big demo, in fact, last night. So there's real change. What we're looking at is the European Central Bank, on Wednesday, the 4th of Feb, pulled the normal credit line to the Greek banks. The Greek banks are effectively busted several times over, but they keep themselves going through this normal lending by the ECB. There is an abnormal lending line, a $60 billion worth of emergency lending that they will now have to tap, and they're allowed to do that. This is like the end scene of Reservoir Dogs. So the European Central Bank says, unless you reverse everything you did in the last 2 weeks, Syriza, we're going to pull this lending on the 28th of Feb. And Syriza says, if you do that, we go bankrupt, we go bust, and we're not going to leave the euro, but you have to throw us out. You have to look. You remember Germany, there are people alive now in Greece who remember when the swastika flew over the Acropolis. Syriza's most famous member of the European Parliament is a 94-year-old guy called Manolis Kleizos, who tore down the swastika as an act of resistance in 1941 from the Acropolis. This is not theory. The German-Greek thing is not theory. It's a big animosity, and it's only going to get worse. So it's a real face down, and it's very rare in the life of a journalist such as myself where you see two such absolutely opposed perspectives that the only outcome is that one
has to back down.
One side has to eat something. Let's call it humble pie.
Right. Well, all right. So let me lastly just explain this to me. Syriza's basically saying you're going to have to kick us out. What is the advantage when they get when they kick us out? That means that you are not going to have the sort of the righteous indignation of us saying that we're leaving and we are.
Look, a country can leave the Eurozone, although it's been the Eurozone authorities have been saying, look, you know, nobody can leave. It's a forever thing. But the rules say no country can be kicked out of it. So even if Greece were to go bust, even if its banks were to go bust, it would be the Eurozone authorities' job to sort that out. I mean, that's why you have a central bank called the European Central Bank. And so there are very powerful, you know, there are very big cards in the hand that Syriza is playing, but to play them, they have to play them hardball. And this guy Varoufakis, you know, kind of ex-University of Texas, quite well-known and connected in the American, you know, financial and economic scene, is playing them incredibly hard. I've never seen a politician play a hand, you know, a kind of hand like this. And my hunch is it's going to end up in compromise, and my hunch is that they will give them a three-month, my hunch is of what the Greeks want is a kind of three-month kind of breathing space. Where they can just get on with some of their quite minimal reforms they want to do at home. You know, $750 a month minimum wage is not communism. They want to get on with that. They want to reschedule the debt so they're not reneging on it, they're not defaulting on it, and they want to calm things down. It's all actually up to Europe whether they allow them to do that. So
it's a fascinating game of chicken.
Chicken is not in it, because remember as well, we have got big stakes in the rest of Europe. I mean, I'm talking to you now from Great Britain, where our Conservative Party wants a referendum on whether we even want to be in the European Union.
Mm.
Okay? Now, if British people see, you know, there's great solidarity between people in Europe. We go on holiday in each other's countries. We play each other at football. We don't hate each other. But if British people see Germany effectively push Greece out of the Eurozone and bankrupt it, This is what's potentially going to happen. I think that the sight of that will play very badly into the British Euro debate. Right now, if I would say Brits would probably vote to stay in the European Union. If we see some crazy catastrophic outcome to this Greek crisis, I think everybody in Europe is going to re-look at that and say, what's the point of having this European Union if countries that vote for things can't then do them? You know, it's kind of we did invent democracy, and Greece, of course, invented it before everybody else. Why have we got an economic system that can't tolerate democratic diversity? That's the way a lot of people in academia and political analysis are thinking about this. So yeah, and then you know. And it really is, although it's a tiny country, 11 million people, 3% of European GDP, it has a great part of our mind space and, of course, of yours, because democracy, you know, much of democracy and much of philosophy in the Western world originates from this small, you know, kind of slightly crazy country.
Right.
And we all have a kind of space for it in our minds.
Fascinating. Paul Mason, Channel 4 News economics editor, Channel 4 News in Great Britain, obviously. Paul, thank you so much for your time today.
A pleasure.
Genuinely appreciate it.
And there you have it, folks. Great interview with Paul Mason, Channel 4 News in the UK. I think that really helps contextualize what's going on. Become a member of the Majority Report today at majority.com/what is it?
And just go to majority.fm and click become a member. Or you could just go to jointhemajorityreport.com.
That's how we get to say whatever the hell it is we want to say, because we rely on you and no one else, or to the extent we rely on anyone else, it's about 1% of our revenue, maybe even less.
You can also support this show by buying all of your Amazon junk through our Amazon link at majorityreportkickback.com. You will see no difference. You get everything that everyone who goes to Amazon gets for the same price and everything, except Amazon has to give us a small kickback from what they earn.
Yes, sir.
From you. So basically, you're siphoning a few dollars from Amazon when you pay them, and you get your product still just as you would regularly, but you're siphoning a few bucks from Amazon into our pockets.
That's right.
You could also support this show by this is a win-win-win, actually. You can get fair trade coffee and chocolates from justcoffee.coop. That's justcoffee.coop. Use coupon code MAJORITY, and you get 10% off your entire order.
Also, download the Majority Report app. Tell people about
MajorityApp.com. It's 100% free. You can listen to the show live. You can download podcasts. You can call in right from the app, just a click of a button. You can IM right from the app with a little chat window that's in the app. It's very nice.
It's an awesome app.
It is.
Write us a review on iTunes. We are going. That really helps us. We're going to go into the fun half right now. You can join us on the IM. The IM is open. Some of you are already hitting us up. You can call us at 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. What is it?
Also, Sam Cedar will be back live tomorrow in studio for the rest of the week, obviously, but starting tomorrow.
Oh, right.
And there's a big event tomorrow. He will be debating libertarian professor Walter Block. Round two, folks.
It's no joke. I mean, you definitely enjoy it more than I do. I enjoy it, but like, wow. And I was actually texting with Sam a little bit earlier about, like, topics. And I could just tell you,
it's going to be a
show. Something else. It's going to be quite a show. Tell all your friends. Tell your libertarian lunatic bag friends. Post it all over. Put it on Reddit.
Oh, yeah, go on Reddit. Go to the libertarian forums on Reddit.
That's right.
The anti-libertarian forums on Reddit.
Whatever.
Go to the subreddits there and post that tomorrow. It's Sam Cedar versus Walter Block, part deux.
We may or may not have a psychiatrist to call in to stage an intervention with Professor
Block. Oh, yes. Last time. You got to become a member now for sure, because last time Walter Block was on this show, the better half, where it was just members calling in, IMing in about the debate, was just as – probably one of the best shows, just that better half too, not even counting with the Walter Block. Alone, one of the best shows of the year.
No, the riffing –
we put it in the best of.
The riffing that it led to, I remember there was a joke – I don't even remember. Either you or I made when the interview was done that literally almost put Sam into a hernia. I think – Well, it was – anyway, I think – I can't remember all of it. But anyways, the point is, folks, it is going to be epic. The first one was epic. So the return of Walter Block. We will see you in the fun half.